Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You're listening to Sci-Fi Wire's 22 Days of Marvel. On today's episode, we're talking about Avengers Infinity War. Stay tuned. Hey, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Wire's 22 Days of Marvel podcast. I'm today's moderator. Insert your name here. That's Danny Roth. I just figured I'd make a joke. Haha. On this podcast, we're counting down to the release of Avengers Endgame by revisiting all the movies of the Marvel Cinematic Universe one day at a time. Each day, we tackle a different movie, re-explore the plot, call out the best scenes and dialogue, and most importantly, track all the connections across these 22 movies and what clues give us a hint at what's gonna happen in Avengers Endgame. Finally, what makes this podcast most exciting is our hosts. Of course, we have huge egos. We're all massive fans of the MCU at Sci-Fi Wire, so this podcast will be hosted by a rotating cast of Sci-Fi Wire staff. Some you've heard before, some you haven't. We're going to geek out from the inner circle from Wire HQ straight to the podcast platform of your choice. So let's jump right in with today's co-hosts. We've got Adam Swiderski. He's the editor-in-chief at Sci-Fi Wire. And John Irwin. He's Mr. Video.
I like that. Yeah. I'll take that as a title.
What's your Captain Video?
What's your actual title, John?
It's actually Dr. Video.
Dr. Video, yeah. Excuse me.
I got a PhD in
Prof. Doctor.
Prof. Video.
Now that we've come to the end of the road.
Oh, yeah, here we are.
Still I can't.
Anyway, that's where we are.
I was going to try and harmonize, but it would have been terrible.
I've never stopped someone singing Boys to Men.
I know.
Yeah, it's true.
This is the last one.
It is. Well, wait a minute. That's not true. It's not the last one because Ant-Man versus the Wasp is after this.
That's
and
true.
So
there
is
are
Captain
two
Marvel.
Other movies, but
come on,
chronologically
man.
Chronologically speaking.
Sure.
In the Marvel timeline, this is the last
Pantheon,
one.
This is, yes.
This is the baton.
The last one before the last one.
As we will soon learn, time has no meaning. Really.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
It's all relative.
So let's talk to Warvis. You know that guy?
Danny. Pleasure as always. John, sup fresh? And if it isn't Adam Swiderski, my old nemesis, we meet again. Don't worry, I totally haven't gone into your Outlook and marked all of your unread emails as read. Ah, this will delay your afternoon by minutes.
Love that guy.
He's got an attitude. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I think he was created by this guy, Max Cataldi, because he's very, they have a lot in common.
He was created specifically to torment me.
Oh, okay. He's got a job to do, and I don't want to prevent him from doing it. I respect Warvis a great deal. So first of all, hello, Warvis. Thank you for your time and attention. I don't consider you an enemy. We are allies. If you would like to get people quickly kind of caught up on what they need to know, just some quick facts about where we are in the pantheon of the Avengers universe, let them all know.
In the events leading up to Avengers Infinity War, we know that Thanos is mad at Loki. After all, he did kind of mess up the attack on New York. We know that the Collector has the Reality Stone. We know that Star-Lord can hold an Infinity Stone. We know that the Nova Corps has the Power Stone. For now, which is interesting, Nick Fury is supposedly dead. We know that Hawkeye has a family. Vision has the Infinity Stone in his forehead, which is probably bad news for him. Black Widow and Bruce Banner have a kind of hot romance going on. Captain America and his gang are fugitives after the events of Civil War. War Machine was kind of crippled, but it looks like Tony Stark has given him some sweet tech to walk in. We know that Bucky killed Iron Man's parents, but Tony's surprisingly kind of cool with it. Doctor Strange has an Infinity Stone, the Time Stone, and we know that Thanos is Gamora and Nebula's adoptive dad, and they want to kill him.
Thanks, Warvis.
Whatever.
You really hooked it up. Don't listen to Adam. He's not. he doesn't have the right attitude. So, how are we feeling about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, real quick? Where we are
at this stage in the game. I mean, this is it, man. This is the beginning of the culmination of phase three. You know, all the Marvel movies are kind of event movies, but this was the event movie. And it was really funny because I've said this, like, it was really weird that we're at a place where, you know, Star Wars movies are coming out and they're not the biggest movie of the year. This was.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, this was everybody, the anticipation was running incredibly high for this. And
trying to figure out how they're going to fit all the puzzle pieces together in one movie was something that I was really looking forward to, and also kind of questioning, because it's damn near impossible to give everybody a character moment and all these groups a little bitty moments to introduce themselves and to flesh out themselves and dynamics between them, and trying to figure out how the Russo brothers are going to execute that.
Plus, I think the other thing that was coming into this is this is Thanos' big bow, right? We'd seen him before in the occasional post-credits scene, but we were going to get full Thanos here. We knew that going in, and I think there were a lot of questions as to how that was going to work, because this was a big purple guy, and something, you know, it's some things in comics translate much easier to the screen than others, and I think there was some questions and concerns as to how well Thanos would translate.
And he translated sexy, according to the internet.
Yeah.
That's it. My understanding is that he can get it.
Thanos thirst is a thing.
Thanos can get it.
Yes, he can. So the movies, I feel, if you were going to go back and rewatch certain ones in order to feel as though you knew what was really going on, got to watch Civil War. That's a must-see. You got to watch Guardians 2, I would say. Thor Ragnarok, you got to see. And Black Panther. I think if you watch those, you're pretty much good.
And maybe I would say the first Avengers, because that's where we get our first glimpse of Thanos.
That's fair. All right. Good point. So yeah, if you watch those movies five, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, at that point, I think you are going to know at least 90 to 95% of what's going on. You're going to be pretty confident. So let's try and break down this plot. It's pretty unwieldy because they are dealing with so many things at once. I would say that there's a solid 25% Earthbound, 75% that's spacebound. Some of it. So the Earthbound stuff is primarily Cap and his team trying to protect and help out Vision by going to Wakanda. That's basically the Earthbound plot. And then the space plot is split up between Thor, Rocket, and Groot trying to get the Space MacGuffin, the new hammer slash axe thing, and then you've got the Guardians that are trying to prevent Thanos from getting to nowhere, to getting the stone that's there. It's a huge shout out to Thor 2 The Dark World. There you go. I hope you watch the end credit sequence, the Thor 2 The Dark World, because that's where that comes from. And then the third space thing is Tony Stark, Stephen Strange, and Spider-Man. And then eventually the Guardians again later. But those are basically like your points.
Your threads.
Yeah, that's the threads that eventually all weave their way to one location, which is Wakanda.
That's a very succinct summation of all those different things.
It's almost like I literally watched the movie one more time up until the second I left my house to record this podcast.
But I would almost say that the other thread that we haven't mentioned is Thanos' thread. I mean, he's a main character in this movie much more than in villains in pretty much any other Marvel film to date. His story is very central to what happens, and so we spend a lot of time with him.
Yeah, but he sort of...
his quest for the stones.
Yes, there is a whole Thanos-Gamora sequence that goes for a little while, and he eventually weaves his way into all of those narratives. That's the other thing.
Yeah, he's the motivation for why we bounce between all the different locations, pretty much, following his, you know, backwards walking into the portals.
Yes, yeah. I mean, the movie literally ends on Thanos will return.
Yeah.
Which really says a lot. Not to spoil the film. Sorry, kids. All right, so the movie opens, and we are sort of picking up right where we left off. Thor Ragnarok.
Media res.
Right. The refugee ship full of Asgardians is being attacked by Thanos and by his acolytes, let's say. And yikes, it does not go well. It does not go well for Thor or Loki, because Thor is already out. He's laid out. It's basically kind of the Loki show.
Yeah.
It's Loki v. Thanos and Thanos's best buds.
Right. I just want to read their names because it's my favorite thing.
Oh, I also have them written down, but go ahead.
Ebony Maw, Cull Obsidian, Proxima Midnight.
And Corvus Glaive.
And Corvus Glaive.
Come on, man.
No. Sorry, I left
there,
one out.
There are four of them.
I know. It's like, I know they come from the comics and everything, so this isn't new to this movie, but man.
Those are awesome.
Whoever was named those characters back in the day, I probably should know that.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
Warvis knows who created those characters. Great job with the naming.
Yeah.
Really great.
So to break
iconic,
those down.
Thanos Minion 1, Thanos Minion 2, Thanos Minion 3.
No.
Like, basically, I wrote down Sorcerer, Big Dude, the
Ebony
Agile
Maw.
Woman.
Oh, yeah. Is he a Mortal Kombat character?
No, but MK11's
like coming out.
It could be.
Ooh.
Yeah. Flawless victory. Yeah. So Ebony Maw is the priesty guy.
Yeah.
He's the one that sort of is the more vocal of the heralds. You've got Cull Obsidian. Cull Obsidian
is the tank.
Is no. I believe Corvus Glaive is the tank.
No, Corvus Glaive is the rogue.
Are you
or like the DPS person?
All right, you're sure. You're 100%
sure
on that.
Yeah.
Okay. The one that looks like he's in World of Warcraft.
That's
yes.
right. Well, and no. So does Proxima Midnight.
Proxima Midnight is the girl.
She's the night elf from Warcraft.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely, a night elf from Warcraft.
Yeah. So they're all yes. They're there. We'll be talking more about them as the plot goes. But basically, the setup is Loki doesn't really want to help out. He doesn't really want. He wants to take a stand against Thanos, even though Thanos was his boss.
Yeah.
Thor is really convinced. He's like, what is it you want, Thanos? The Tesseract. We don't have that Tesseract. We left that. That's long gone. Lol. Of course, Loki still has it. And there's kind of this cool thing, this great parallel that happens. One of the best lines in the movie, which is the reason why Loki is still feeling a little bit confident, is why? Because we have a Hulk. And Hulk and Thanos get into a big old fight.
And Hulk low-key gets his ass kicked.
It does.
Boom!
Good joke.
Thank low you. Key.
Low-key. Yeah.
Oh, God. That's great.
You should be ashamed of yourself. Although I did kind of like that one.
But it's cool because, you know, that was the whole thing that they said to Loki back in the day. Right? We have a Hulk. At which point Loki just kind of got trounced. He got kind of flipped
Puny
around
God.
By the leg and was delightful. So yeah. He gets to say it. And then Hulk loses and Heimdall whisks him away back to Earth, that being the Hulk, using that thing that they've got.
The Bifrost.
That's the one. Boy, he's doing great, folks. So, yeah, he uses the Bifrost, sends Hulk away, and poor Loki.
And that's the last you see the Hulk in the entire movie.
That's
they
it.
Like
that
jump
is,
ahead,
that
but
is
it's just
end
weird
of the
to think about
of the
on
full
rewatch.
Hulk, really.
And the full Hulk.
Yeah,
yeah
you kind of get some glimpses here and there.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, so Heimdall gets it immediately.
Yep.
So, yeah, they say that was a mistake and then gets it. I didn't know, by the way, Thor says that his best friend got stabbed in the chest. I didn't know that Heimdall was Thor's best friend.
Yeah, man.
I hadn't thought about him having a number one BFF. But now we know, confirmed, Heimdall. Everybody wants Idris Elba to be their best bud. But,
obviously.
But only Chris Hemsworth gets to make it true.
He DJs all the Asgardian
it's
parties.
Not, it's as if like Chris Hemsworth doesn't have enough going for him. Like, good looks, you know, awesome accent. And then
BFFs
he gets
Idris
Elba as his
yeah.
BFF. Like, come on.
Sure, why not?
Share something, please.
Yeah, messed up.
Well, he was missing an eye at this point in the film.
Yeah.
So, you know,
you
Persian
go.
Flaw.
That made him hotter, to be honest.
Whoa. Well, all right.
Sorry, I went there.
That's fine. You're allowed. So Loki bites it. He tries to fake it out as though he's gonna side with Thanos, but of course he doesn't. He tries to shank him instead. It doesn't go great. Loki dies. Maybe for real this time. Seems likely. All of the things that we've heard is that he's really, 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 really dead this time.
Except for the fact that he has a miniseries coming up on Disney Plus.
Yeah, but I mean that
could be in the past.
Could
knows,
take place
but,
anywhere in yeah. the in the timeline. You don't yeah. know. But
sure.
So he seemed to be killed pretty hard, and then they peace out and they kind of like leave Thor in a nebulous space. We don't really know what the deal is with Thor. Yeah. One assumes he's still alive. He's one of the core Avengers, but who knows?
No, he probably died unceremoniously off screen.
Yeah,
that's
it.
Probably what happened.
And that was the end.
Yeah.
And and now we go to whose house?
Strange's house.
Strange's house.
Yes.
Where?
I thought you were going to say Wong's house.
Wong's house. Would have been better.
Oh,
we really blew it.
I'm sorry.
I should have jumped in there.
Yeah.
I should have.
Yeah.
Say
a little
what?
Too late.
Who's? All right. Yeah.
Anyway.
Wong's house. So, yes. Yeah, so, Stephen Strange and Wong, they're chilling. They're going to go out and get a sandwich, as you do.
That's how you defeat Thanos. You make him a sandwich and distract him.
Yes.
Now realizing he had to take his gauntlet off because the sandwich is so greasy.
I actually think that Thanos would have just rethought the whole situation eating that sandwich. He would have said, what if even one of these guys died? I think
they should have given Star-Lord a sandwich and he wouldn't have blown up the whole planet. But we'll get to that later.
So many people would have been helped by one of these sandwiches.
It's true.
Anyway, so now, Chris, we're here. We're with
back on Earth.
Strange and Wong on Earth. The Bifrost comes through the stairs and we get who is kind of the actual, you know, when you think about heralds of Thanos, it's really, it's Bruce.
True.
Because he keeps saying, he's coming. Thanos is coming. Who? Dun, 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 dun. And then we finally get the credit sequence.
Yeah.
And now, do we just immediately go to Tony and Pepper? Is that where we are?
This is true.
Okay.
Central Park.
So Tony Stark is there with Pepper. Boom. He gets recruited by Stephen Strange and Wong because it's coming, you know? And then, baha, Ma and Obsidian arrive from space in New York. And everybody's like, whoa, aliens again in New York City. Because we just went through this like a decade ago.
Yeah, that's a Stan Lee cameo.
Yes.
Yep.
What's the matter with you kids? You never seen a spaceship before?
There you go. That's the line.
There you go. I mean, come on. If he lived in New York for the past decade, he has seen that because we had the whole Chitauri invasion in Avengers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's the first time you could see his Spidey senses.
Because
he didn't get to see that really in Homecoming at all.
That's
and
true.
That's the first time you see that's actually going to be a part of his character.
Yeah. I don't know what it says that it takes something as big as an alien invasion to activate his Spidey senses, but hopefully that'll be something he develops over time.
Yep. So it's yet another space butthole has appeared.
Yes. But this one shoots something out instead of sucking everything in.
Woo!
Wait a minute, there's a fight. There's a space wizard fight versus Doctor Strange. They're both wizards. And he's like, oh, you're puny magic, blah, but then it's all cool. And then they try to escape.
Yes, well, Ma
tries to escape.
The reason that this fight is happening is because they want the time stone, which is what Stephen Strange has got.
That is right, the Eye of Agamotto.
Yep.
I called it Agamemnon in the Doctor Strange one, and I whipped myself 100 times to make up for that.
Wow.
Agamotto.
Extreme. But
just time zone.
Just normal things. So that's what the fight is about. Tony's in the fight. Spidey's in the fight. Some of the best lines in the movie come from this scene.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
I mean, the relationship between Spidey and Tony has always been pretty great. In the way that we've got it peppered in here, they really play into it, and it's a lot of fun. And then also, I think it's a lot of fun seeing Tony and Doctor Strange bounce off each other because they're more or less the same character, except one has technology and one has magic.
I always loved those dynamics.
Yeah, they're both these arrogant, super smart guys with, you know, very similar backstories. And so seeing them kind of jockey for position and everything and play off each other. And both those actors are great. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and Hulk won't come out. That's important.
Nope. Well,
no.
The Hulk will not come out.
We don't
know why. The result of this whole shebang is that Strange gets captured. And Tony and Petey.
Yeah.
Nobody calls him Petey. It's Tony and Peter.
Fresh in the Iron Spider costume.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, we get the Iron Spider suit.
Mr. Stark, it smells like a new car in here.
Yeah.
Which is a fan favorite when I was watching in the theaters.
Yes,
everybody erupted to see that come on screen for sure.
So they're up on the ship. Tony gets yelled at by Pepper.
Yeah.
Goes to space anyway because he's got to. That's just where he's at. That's just the situation as it is. So they're up there. And now, in fact, we cut to giant letters.
Scotland.
Space.
Oh, is this
space?
Oh, is this Guardian
no, it
first?
Goes and to then Scar- Scar- doesn't think, it go to Scotland first?
I think
go
to Scotland first. We have Vision and
for Vision.
Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, we gotta see Steve with his hunky beard.
Yeah.
First.
Fine. Space first.
First, it's space. We're out in space. We're listening to music. Some of us are listening to music. Some of us are sleeping.
Yeah.
Drax is asleep. Groot's playing video games, cursing like a sailor.
Awesome entrance, though, for Guardians. Yeah. I gotta say, they didn't do a good job of introducing everybody, but I thought their entrance really encapsulated in legitimately like 30 seconds of what that whole team is about.
And it's so exciting because of all of them, they feel the furthest from the rest of the gang on the MCU.
Right.
So to actually see them and to know that they're truly about to interact with the rest of this universe is a big deal.
It's huge.
So they're there, and they are. It's kind of cool because I feel that this scene is a reminder of what they're up to when they're not being the guardians of the galaxy, which is responding to hails, because maybe the people that need help will pay them, or they can steal something from them if they're dead or whatever, which sounds exactly, that's, you know, that just seems like what they're up to all the time. That's how they pay the bills. That's how they get their yucks. It's just, you know, helping, quotes. But who they end up helping is Thor.
Yeah, who splats on their windshield.
Yep.
Like a bug.
Yeah, it happens. That's a kind of a call out. It makes me think of, again, Thor the Dark World. There's a whole sequence where Thor is sliding along with Chris Eccleston down the side of a window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's actually a throwback to my favorite MCU movie, Thor the Dark World.
But this is, I mean, this whole sequence of them getting together, I think, is a lot of fun. And it's really just like, because as we moved into Ragnarok, Chris Hemsworth's comedic chops and the character's comedic element really came to the front. Mm-hmm. And that just fits really well. That vibe in particular fits really well with the Guardians. So just like, you know, seeing how Star-Lord feels intimidated by Thor, so he has to kind of try to puff out his chest and imitate him. And
yeah,
and then having him interact with Rocket and call him Rabbit the whole time. Like, all that stuff. It's a delight. It's a delight.
It's very endearing for a character. I think that it, up until this movie, was to me a kind of like the dumbass of the Avengers, really. Like, the like very super powerful, but not the smartest guy in the world. And he joins in this, and he actually has a drive and a plan. And before this, I feel like he's very much, Thor as a character, is all over the place, kind of just like responding whichever is in front of his face. And now he's like, okay, I need to go make this axe to come back and attack Thanos. He has more of like a gamesmanship about kind of his way forward. But to me, the Quill-Thor dynamic is one of the most funny, or most fun at least, that we see in the really the whole movie.
You will not be taking our pod today, sir.
Quill, are you making your voice deeper?
No, you are. You're imitating the Godman. It's weird.
No, I'm not.
He just did it again.
This is my voice.
So yes, they split the party. Rocket and Groot go along with Thor because they have got to go and get this axe. That's the one thing that's going to make it so that maybe they've actually got a shot against this Thanos guy. And everybody else, that being Drax, Mantis, Gamora, and our own man, Peter Quill, they're going to go to nowhere in order to hopefully prevent Thanos from getting yet another stone. That stone was, in fact, once again, left off at nowhere with the Collector during the end credit sequence for Thor the Dark World, the best MCU movie. And so now we split from that to...
Now we get Edinburgh.
Now, yes, now we're in Scotland, and we're getting a kind of a skip ahead.
Yeah.
Right? This is one of those things that I wish, if they were going to do mini-episodes, mini-sodes of things to sort of fill in blanks, I would have loved some stuff, some of the meetups between... Vision and Scarlet Witch. I really wish that that Wanda and Viz had kind of, we'd seen had more of their love story. I wish we had gotten a little more of it,
aren't we, in the miniseries that's on Disney Plus?
Yeah, I just wish that it happened
before the movie.
I'd love to take like Full House, just Vision and Scarlet Witch. You know, that's it. A sitcom version of it.
Well, like the comic.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, that comic,
except it was the Visions, but it was different. Yeah.
But they're chilling out. Their whole thing is that they're thinking about just kind of separating entirely, just kind of run away, be in love, you know?
Yeah.
A beautiful story. I tell you, if I was living this Avengers life, I wouldn't be living this Avengers life. That would be the tip that I would be on 100%. I would say, see ya.
Yeah.
Got a hot partner? Either way, you got a hot partner? Why would you stick around? Just have a good time. You're a powerful witch slash super robot.
Vision doesn't really have a choice because his head carries... The time stone.
Right, he's having some... I mean, not the time stone. He's got the mind stone.
And basically, at this point, everybody, except for Thor and Rocket, are all chasing Infinity Stones.
Yeah.
Thanos and his minions are. These guys are. Like, even Spider-Man and Iron Man are chasing Infinity Stone. That's basically like it. Thor is the only one that's going, like, counter...
It's like, you like
that.
MacGuffins? We put a MacGuffin in your MacGuffin so you could MacGuffin while you MacGuffin.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. And MacGuffins in different spots in the universe.
That's right.
And related to World of Warcraft, bam! Proxima Midnight and Corvus Glaive show up.
That's true, they do.
They do, and they're...
Awesome fight scene. So, yeah, I love this fight scene.
Here's what I like about it. I do like the concept that they've got a weapon that makes it so that Vision can't just...
Phase through everything,
because you kind of would need to.
Yeah.
Yes.
You got to nerf that somehow.
It's a number
but
one.
But now, we get our first look at Captain America since Civil War.
And he's got a beard.
And he's sexy bearded Steve.
Yeah, this is
another
badass
entrance. I mean, like backlit, and you can't make him out. You see his frame and you're like, oh shit, I know who that is.
It's just weird because it's like, it's sold as this moment of like, ooh, this is the really intimidating guy. And while Steve is great, his powers related relative to Wanda and Vision are not that intimidating. Like for someone from her, if you were in outer space, you know, dark elf or night elf, I just, you know,
that's where like, confidence is intimidating.
It's a guy, you know, but I guess for us, it's exciting because we haven't seen these characters in a while. We know how badass Steve is. And fight.
And he comes with a couple of people too.
Yeah.
Now Black Widow and Sam Wilson and Falcon back in the game of it. I love it because you get these little pockets of teams assembling. Like now you have the Earth Squad, right? These are like the ground troops, like, basically. And then you have the space team assembling. And so you start to get the start of where all these teams end up.
Yep.
Yeah, they basically just, they get in there. They fight exactly enough to get the two World of Warcraft elves to leave. And one of them is clearly a goblin, but they leave. They say, you know, you're not going to get a second shot at
deuces.
This. Deuces, they're out, and they say, get them to the jet. That being Vision, because he's been beat up pretty bad. And they've got some thoughts about where they could go, what they might do. And
but
now
we'll have to wait to find out what that
but,
is.
But now the weirdest jump of all. The thing that I didn't, I mean, I guess I don't know where you would put this scene in the movie, but it, I don't think there is a perfect spot. I don't even know if there is a right spot, but this is where we go to, the past and we get Gamora's backstory.
Yeah.
Well, before we jump on there, this is, I think, the start of where the whole conversation about killing Vision starts, right? Which is like, do we kill Vision with the Mind Stone in there? Or do we try to save him and try to
there's a scene.
It starts.
You're close.
Right.
You're close. It's the next time we see them. It's we'll be with Rhodey soon. Once we get to Rhodey, they bring it up.
Okay.
Spoilers: Rhodey's going to show up. So now we're getting. This is a big Thanos set piece. This is a big Gamora origin story. So you understand why it is that she is the assassin that she has become, and the reason is because he came to her planet. He killed half of their population with regular old laser guns, I guess you would say, because he doesn't have any of them Infinity Stones at this time. And he doesn't let Gamora look at them. He shows her this little knife that you can balance on the center, you know.
Perfectly balanced, this whole thing should be. Too much to one side or the other.
Here, you try.
This is the reason why Gamora has kind of become his daughter, one of the daughters of Thanos. But he really connects with her in this moment. I guess she tolerates him in this moment, but that's how they wind up together. It kind of gives you a sense of the brutality of him. And now we are seeing Gamora in the present time, and she's still got the little knifey knife with the jewel in the middle.
Cool.
And they're going to nowhere, right? That's where they're on. They're on a road to nowhere.
And then
it's a very musical episode of the show.
It is. Who knew?
Oh, shit. Then we start getting the family reunion because Nebula is right around the corner. Then
That's coming up. Then we get to sort of piggyback on this concept of how brutal Thanos can be. We get to nowhere. And man, I actually think this is mind-bending. This whole sequence really threw me for a loop.
The reality
stuff?
Because he's already got it, right? So the Collector is supposed to have the reality stone.
Yeah.
This is where I start to get confused as to what the limits of the Infinity Stones are.
Here's my criticism.
Because Thanos,
you really get to see
Thanos
used.
Does some stuff here where you're like, why doesn't he just keep doing that over and over? Like, if he can turn people, as he does to the Guardians who show up at nowhere, into like little
slinkies.
Coils and make them fall into pieces and stuff. Just do that all the time. Why only do that once in a while?
This is where I start to get confused about. So here's the answer to that question, in my opinion.
Because is the answer.
Because he's a sadist. You know, I don't think he wants to just, you know, he's done it and he says, bored. What's next? Got to get that next stone so I can mess him up even more, but in a completely different way.
He also mentions it briefly of saying he likes it to be random when it's killing, right? He's not out there to go and be like, you live, and you don't. He doesn't think that he's going to be the one passing the verdict. He just wants to go and have
except that he killed Loki.
Out.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't kill.
And he doesn't
kill
to be.
Any of the Guardians. As soon as he leaves, the reality bending effects.
And also,
reverse.
He's
so
he killed everybody in Nowhere. Also, right, everyone assumes yeah. they're all dead.
So the point is just like what's and this is what I think. You know, as much as exciting as this movie is, I think one of its flaws is that it really doesn't get into. It doesn't tell you the rules, whether it comes to Thanos's point of view or, I mean, he's portrayed more often, he portrays himself as a utilitarian, not a sadist. You know, it's like, I'm only doing this because I have to. But is that true? Does he really feel that way? Is he a sadist? Does the gauntlet work all the time? Does it need to recharge? Why doesn't, like, anytime anyone gets in his way, he just turn them into a slinky, like,
And I bet you're going to find out some of those rules in the next movie.
I hope so.
Because, and you have to, because even before they had that sneak peek released where you find out Captain Marvel, or I think it's Captain America, whoever it is, Black Widow actually, monitoring like their kind of like display of the Earth, and you say, oh, they've used the gauntlet again. Yeah. Before then, no one knew if you could even use it once,
right,
you could use it
right,
twice.
Right.
You have no idea. So I hope and think that they're going to reveal at least a little bit. I don't know if it's going to be fully fleshed out to, like, you know, tell you exactly the extent of the powers of Reality Stone, but hopefully we'll get a little bit of that.
Anyway, yeah. But the upshot of this scene is that he gets the stone and he gets Gamora, right? This is the scene.
He does.
Gamora.
Boy, it's a quick turnaround on that one, isn't it? Because literally right before they show up to Nowhere, there's a scene where Gamora says, hey, listen, if he gets me, you got to kill me.
Yeah.
Because at this point they are together. That was a thing that sort of, I didn't remember how together they were at the end of Guardians 2, but they are together for sure. Mm-hmm. And her expectation is as him being the boyfriend, as it were, is that he's going to kill her. And he does try to, but then his pew-pews turn into bub-bubs. Yeah, he gets bubble-gunned, and then Thanos pieces out with Gamora because he's got to go and get the Soul Stone, and only Gamora knows where the Soul Stone is.
That's right. She's got soul. They take the soul. You have to, in order to get the Soul Stone, you first have to get there, and you get there by taking the Soul Train. And then you meet with the Soul Man, who in this case is not James Brown, but is in fact
that'd be hilarious
the Red
if
Skull.
Red Skull
yeah, well,
just
yes.
broke out
yeah.
in time with Soul Man.
Here we go. So now we're with Rhodey. Rhodey's having a talk with government types, and screw those guys. They're not very nice. They've made all these folks that are definitely heroes into long term villains. And Rhodey basically just says, nope, not going to be involved, not going to help you with that. I'm going to help Cap and everybody else. And at this point, we get this awkward scene of Bruce showing up, and he says, hey, Nat, you know. And Falcon says, this is awkward. And then I wondered, why did Falcon say this is awkward? Like, were he and Nat hooking up?
You know, they talk behind each other's backs. They spill dish. Just
it was
like
awkward.
A group of friends does. Like, oh, shit. You
it
know,
was
I remember that they used to be like.
We've all forgotten about this romantic subplot.
Yeah.
By this point, after all these movies that have gone on since Age of Ultron.
I wish, like, I could say that
purpose.
I had. But yeah. Anyways, yes. Now, to your point, John, they talk about the possibility of destroying the stone, the Mind Stone, and there's an alternate plan. What time is it? Why, it's Wakanda time.
That's right.
That's where we're going, because that's the other solution. So we go there. Bucky's there. T'Challa gives him a new arm. Bucky says, where's the fight? T'Challa says, on its way.
Another and awesome
He says, I didn't give you that arm for fighting. I gave it to you for hugging. That was my favorite line.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
awesome. That's
no,
good.
You didn't actually say that.
That would I wish.
That'd be good, though. Yeah.
And then they hugged it out.
Like the Guardians and Wakanda, the two that, and maybe it's just the music and then like the scene setting, but those two entrances, like, it took me back to the original movies, the Guardians one, and then Black Panther.
And Black Panther, oof. I mean, had barely left theaters at this point, if not was also still playing.
True.
So I think I can say personally, I was still riding the high from that as well. Mm-hmm. So when you get back to those characters in that location, it was really exciting.
It was.
Oh yeah. So that's actually very quick. We're there for like a split second, and then we go back to Stephen Strange, and we get the whole play out how Tony and Peter are gonna save the day, and they do it by referring to that old movie,
yes,
Aliens.
Did you ever see this really old movie, Aliens?
That's right.
Agonizing. How dare you,
well,
Peter Parker? I mean, he's a child.
Yes.
So they blow our priesty alien
Sorry, you're talking about Ebony Maw.
Ebony Maw. Oh, Ebony Maw gets. They make a big Ebony Maw in the ship, and he blows right out of that.
Hey,
thing.
That's true.
And then they kind of put it back up, and then there's an argument between Steven and Tony about what to do. Right, Steven wants Tony to take the ship, control the ship, and go back to Earth. And Tony does not want to do that. He thinks like that's we've got to take the fight to Thanos. And we get kind of a nice, what I really appreciate, because it's a throwback to everything that's happened. There are so many good moments in this film. I really like that Tony says,
Thanos has been inside my head for 6 years, since he sent an army to New York, and now he's back.
It's a throwback not just to Avengers, but also to Iron Man 3 and that's the PTSD right. that he was dealing with. So we know, and everything that he's done, I think you could argue that the reason why Age of Ultron happens, the reason why Tony makes that mistake, is because he's afraid of Thanos, period. Like, he's just been thinking about Thanos this whole time. So they agree that they're going to go to wherever it is the ship is autopiloted to go to so that they can take the fight to Thanos rather than let him come back to humanity, let him come back to Earth and do even more damage. Man, I was keep going. I'm ready to be at Wakanda, but we've got to deal with Thanos and Gamora. With the weirdest, just the goddamn weirdest cameo ever. I mean, first we get Nebula. That's cool. That's where we find out that that yes, in fact, the Soul Stone is still out there. We find out where it is. We get a little bit of, you know, sisterly love. There's a thing that keeps happening, right? Like with siblings. First, it's Loki gives up the information about the Tesseract because Thanos is messing up with Thor, and then it happens again. But now it's Gamora giving up information because of what's happening to Nebula. It's a little it's a twofer. It happens two times right there. Listen. I'm gonna call a mulligan. Can we just agree that we don't need to talk too much about the Thor sequence? It's a real fetch quest.
Of it is a fetch quest, but it also has one of the
and the weird, cameo in it.
Yeah,
though, is
I mean,
awesome.
This is like, the thing.
I mean, I love
that
Peter
got one
Dinklage.
Of the loudest roars of the entire movie. To
and
be
it's
honest.
It's just so it's weird. It's so weird and meta
it's
because
so
that
weird.
Like the reaction that people have to that would not matter at all if we didn't know Peter Dinklage the actor.
That is very true.
You know, and everybody was speculating as to what his role was going to be, and then you get someone who. You know, plays a giant. So that was a big. I mean, I agree. The moment the plotting is not that exciting, but that particular element I think was a something
yeah,
that
cool.
people
it's,
loved.
It's cool that Dinklage is there. I like him. Yes, that's where we find out that Heimdall is Thor's best friend. We also find out that Thor is 1,500 years old.
The one thing that did happen there that, and maybe I should save this for the speculation part, but I'm already gonna bring it up anyways. When they're talking about making Stormbreaker, Dinklage's character, I don't remember the name, but he ends up saying. This can even summon the Bifrost.
Right.
And it was like randomly thrown in. I'm like, why are you throwing that in? I'm like, okay, that to me, if you're going to force that line in there, probably has some sort of payoff in the end.
That Which would be does. A teary, by the way.
A teary.
Yeah. A teary-eyed gentleman. Yes. Oh, and also Rocket had a eyeball in his pocket, I guess. He had it like in his fanny pack. And so now Thor is back to having two eyes.
Boom.
He's a two-eye guy.
I love it.
And his axe.
Yes.
So I love it on like a talk show segment if it's in Rocket's pocket and just random shit. And I imagine like, he just has so many freaking like 90s comics level of pockets and stuff stashed in there.
And the other thing is that's where the gauntlet got made, right? It got made at Nidavellir.
Yeah. Did we talk about
the awesome star?
The getting of the Soul Stone? Did we skip right over that?
It hasn't happened yet.
Okay, well then let's talk about it.
All right, so yeah. The Soul Stone, this is when our best good friend.
Mm-hmm. Break my heart.
Yeah, Red Skull shows up?
Sure.
Absolutely unquestionably the weirdest cameo that
Played
this movie has.
Played by Hugh Ross Marquand.
Yep, sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
not
mm-hmm,
Hugo Weaving.
Mm-hmm, not Hugo Weaving. No. But yeah, so... Red Skull apparently has to watch over this thing after he has his. He doesn't die apparently in the first Avenger, which we didn't know. Instead, he got whisked away to this place to watch over the Soul Stone and to know everybody who would come and try and get the Soul Stone. Like they would show up, and he would just kind of instantaneously know their backstory. So he knows what's up, and he's like, "Hey, man,
it's
if
like
you want
a Soul Stone version of the Watchers,
right. It's like
almost
if you want to have my Soul Stone." You right. gotta kill your girlfriend. No, she's not a
daughter.
Girl. She's like a daughter. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So that's the deal. He's got in order to get the Soul Stone, he has to give up the one thing that he cares about and loves the most, and that is Gamora doesn't quite glom onto that immediately. She thinks that this is Thanos's loss, that he's failed because he loves nothing.
Right.
But according to this movie, Thanos loves Gamora. I don't accept that. This is actually my biggest beef with this movie, is that I don't buy it. I don't accept that. Thanos loves exactly two things, Jack and shit, and Jack
I left down. I disagree with you.
All right.
And I think, you know, Thanos is a horrible quote-unquote person, Titan, whatever you want to call it. But horrible people are still able to love things. I mean, you know, the whole thing, Hitler loved dogs is the example everyone pulls out, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's an interesting take on the character, and it's part of this whole element of Thanos basically being the main character of this film, is that they give him all these layers of complexity that you don't normally get, even if it's just that he is capable of loving something other than himself, even if as he's crazy, a crazy genocidal maniac, you know?
And I wonder if it's going to come into play in Endgame too, of like feeling guilt for that, because like you don't ever sit on that. He doesn't ever let his actions like resonate enough, right? He's always in next stone after getting this. Like, he doesn't let it sink in. Now that he's had time off, taking the armor off, all that, like, if it starts to sink in, holy hell, what did I do to, not to everybody else, but to at least Gamora, the one that obviously they tried to play up that he has feelings for, it could come back.
So wait, where are we? All right, so now...
Got the Soul Stone.
Okay, he has a Soul Stone. They do kind of like a bit where he suddenly just kind of has it. It actually made me think of Black Panther when he goes to that sort of dream space.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very similar kind of thing, except, you know, evil. So Guardians and Team Tony, etc., get into a squabble. They don't realize that they're on the same team. But then they kind of realize that they're gonna work together to defeat Thanos, and this is where we find out Stephen Strange. He uses the Time Stone and his big, super smart wizard brain to look at every possible future.
He reads all the scripts.
He reads every single script that all the different drafts.
Opposite of Tom Holland, doesn't spill anything.
It's exactly. 1,700,000,000,000, whatever it is. I have it. It's 14,605,000 alternate futures. You're welcome. I wrote it down.
And in which one did we win?
One. Only one. And that is going to become pretty clear later. Yada, 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 yada.
Now big fight. Big fight with Thanos.
Big fight.
This is the scene that they first showed, I think, at Comic-Cons and stuff, where Thanos is fighting all these characters and he throws a moon of Titan at them, which is...
Well, there's two fights happening at once, basically, right? So you've got the fight with Thanos, and you also have to fight Wakanda, where the remaining acolytes of Thanos have come down, and they've got all them big-ass Venom monsters that they're going to use in order to break down Wakanda's shields. And so those are the two fights that are happening, and they're trying to... Shuri's trying to help Vision. She's trying to take the Mind Stone out without killing him. And these are the things that are happening at the same time. How does that resolve itself? Badly. Everything goes real sideways in a really dramatic, sad way.
An incredibly frustrating way.
Yeah, it is. This whole...
You're talking about Quill, right?
Yes.
Not the Wakanda
here we
people.
Go. Okay.
So let's break this down. So basically, the Guardians and Tony and Doctor Strange and Spider-Man, they're going to win. They're distracting Thanos. All kinds of crazy stuff is happening, and they get Mantis onto Thanos' back. She starts to try to put him to sleep. He's very powerful, so he doesn't go to sleep, but he goes into like this fugue state. Great.
Mm-hmm.
They're all holding him. All the strongest people are holding him. And is it Rock? I can't remember who's pulling the glove off.
It's Peter and Tony
pulling the glove
together.
Off.
They're both
and
doing it.
This is the most infuriating thing, because Thanos lets Peter Quill know that he killed Gamora, and...
Don't engage. We almost got this off!
Tell me she's lying.
Asshole! Tell me you didn't do it!
Because he's such a wacky hothead, he decides to punch Thanos in the face when he couldn't, when he has a gun that could literally shoot him in the head and kill him. Instead, he punches him in the face, which of course breaks Mantis's hold. Oops, he's not getting the gauntlet. And then
poof.
And his fingertips too. Yeah, it's not it's like they were just so, still trying to get it off. Like,
it's one of those things that I understand why it, like, it works in the plot, but as a viewer, it was so frustrating.
It was very frustrating.
It's just one of those. Yeah. It's one of those movie moments where a character does something so incredibly dumb that it feels a little.
I wish it had been a little more
unrealistic. Or not, I don't say unrealistic.
I wish it had been more earned.
Yes,
that I will say. Yeah. But there's a cool thing that happens here, which is that we get a cool switch, an unexpected thing that happens, which is that throughout this whole time, anytime you see Tony and Stephen Strange getting into fights, Strange is pretty clear on this point, which is that the only thing that matters is the time stone.
Right.
If it comes down to the stone versus you versus the kid, y'all can die. I don't care.
Yep.
All that matters is the stone. And when Tony is actually, you know, he's been injured, he's about to be killed by Thanos. In fact, Stephen Strange turns around and goes,
spare his life, and I will give you the stone.
It's complicated and big that he does it. Not sure that's entirely earned either, but it's exciting.
Yeah.
And it shows that they have kind of bonded over time. And
I don't know if it, to me, it didn't come off as they bonded. It very much came off as Strange has a plan. Like, he has something in his mind.
Right.
Like, yeah. He knows
what's
up. This is
the only path
to
victory.
It. Like, this
right.
is,
they have to lose in order to win.
To your point, like, he put such an emphasis on it earlier. Like, I'm not going to give this up. I don't care who you are. And then, nope, here it is. It's like, nope, okay. He knows something none of us viewers know.
Yeah. So that happens. Thanos, of course, leaves because he only needs one more stone. He goes to Wakanda. He gets the stone. Like, they try to kill Vision. They succeed in killing Vision, but because Thanos has got the time stone, he reverses time.
Right.
Unkills Vision, then kills Vision again, but this time he gets the stone. And then Thor shows up. That's cool.
He's awesome. Kicking ass.
He kicks a lot of ass, but not enough, because he gets Thanos in the chest.
You should have gone for the head.
Should aim for the head. How much more powerful Thor is than any other Avenger?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He joins and then wipes out basically the entire army of those weird alien creatures by himself. And when they've been fighting them, even Scarlet Witch down there have been fighting them for a while.
But it's not enough. And then
the scene that basically defines this movie for
snappity
everybody.
Snap.
Yep.
Snaps
the
it up.
Snapture, as it's come to be known.
Yes.
Thanos wins.
I love that name.
Yeah, Thanos wins.
Now, here's my question. Thanos' reasoning for killing half the people in the universe is that there's a shortage of resources and it's going to be over. Like, but you have the power to change reality, double the resources instead of having the people.
Better podcasts have tried to.
Yeah,
have tried to sort through this thing. I just
so
you know.
Anyway, yeah. But it's. I mean, it's a. This is a big moment, and it's not. I think it was a very unexpected moment for a lot of people because a lot of characters that we've all come to know and love get dusted.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we go back and forth between, well, we know that they're all going to come back, but also it's pretty impactful. I don't think you can take anything away from it. It happens, it's big, it's sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird in that some people get enough time to deliver their heartfelt lines and other people just vanish.
Yeah.
All right,
and
man.
The music in that
no, and listen, I this scene was very impactful, but it, you know, it's. Just,
I mean, that's the there's a thing that happens very early on in the film that parallels kind of nicely, or they relate to each other very specifically. Tony Stark has a dream, and his dream is that Pepper is pregnant, or that they're having, they have kids, and he thinks for sure it means that that Pepper must be pregnant, and she says nope, and the reason. That I think he was having that dream is because he has kind of got a surrogate son in Peter Parker. He really does that throughout the film. He constantly treats Peter like a kid, like his kid. And Peter is always super, super respectful. He's always like, sir. And so you get this moment of Peter's death.
Stark, I don't feel so good.
You're all right.
I don't know what's happening. I don't know. I don't want to go, sir, please.
And it hits Tony so goddamn hard because his whole beef with himself is that everything that he does is never enough and simultaneously is too much. And this is just the ultimate. Like, he knows what this means.
This is well-earned.
This kid's death is a representation of so many other deaths, but also specifically that... this kid is surrogate son that I think he has really come to love in a way that he had not planned to. I think it just hits him so goddamn hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody else loses. I mean, it literally ends on Captain America saying,
"Oh God."
Yeah.
Great. I mean, great ending. Crushing. Mm-hmm. They really crushed it.
The music underneath that ending too is what kind of doubled down on its effect. They dropped all the music out and all you hear is the wind, you know, as everybody kind of dissolves. That's all you hear underneath it. And yeah. It just sinks in so much for a movie of this caliber and so much action that was just happening, so much hype, and then all of a sudden dropped all that out. It was so eerie.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's your favorite? What's the best scene in the film?
Best scene. I'm a sucker for like superhero elements. Like I'm a very much sucker for like the poses and all that sort of stuff. So like the entrance of Wakanda and the Guardians were two of my favorites.
You bomb back!
Because it dropped me back into that mindset, like holy hell, this whole squad, all these different teams are coming back, reuniting. We're gonna see how these different interactions work. Those two were two of my favorites for sure. And then the fighting at the end on Wakanda in particular, the space fighting I could have lived with or without, but the Wakanda stuff, seeing Okoye and Black Widow team up and seeing those sort of pockets of people work together that you wouldn't have seen before are stuff that I really liked.
Adam?
I liked that final battle scene. When they were fighting Thanos, I liked that. When they were fighting hordes of CGI minions, that's less, like, as much as it's cool to see those characters come together, those fights just feel like there's nothing behind them to me. There's no stakes. They're not going to, Captain America's not going to get taken out by CGI guy number 50.
For sure.
You know, but I love the character moments, and my favorite was, we've talked about it, but it was when Thor first starts interacting with the Guardians, because I think, again, the fullest and the best realization of the Thor character had only come recently with Ragnarok, and I think we saw it continue here, and it just clicked so very well with the vibe of the Guardians, and I think all those people bouncing off each other comedically had so much chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun. How about you, Danny?
It's the end. It's the most impactful scene. You could argue there's a lot of really cool individual scenes. There's a lot that I like. My best line is not from there, but that scene is just killer. That the shit between Tony and Peter, forget it. I don't think you could top it. For me, it's the best. Do you have a favorite line?
I have a couple of them. One, the Spider-Man and Peter Quill line on Titan.
Tell him about the dance off to save the universe.
What dance off? It's not.
Like in Footloose, the movie.
Exactly like Footloose. Is it still the greatest movie in history?
It never was.
Yes, that's great. Two people that are like a key component of the characters are built on pop culture references, kind of interacting and seeing how that dynamic worked was awesome to me. Also, having Dinklage's and Thor and Dinklage's response of, it'll kill you only if I die. Yes, that's what killing you means. I'm like, yeah, I love that stuff. Like calling out the ridiculous statements that happen in superhero movies and comics, like, for what they are. I'm like, yeah, that's it.
What about you, Adam?
I think I have to go with the resurrection of the Doctor Strange name gag.
I'm sorry, I'm confused as to the relationship here. I mean, what is he, your ward?
No. I'm Peter, by the way.
Doctor Strange.
Oh, you're using your made-up names. I'm Spider-Man, then.
That was, as goofy as it is, and as like who's on first as that gag continues to be, I can't get enough of it. And then I had another one, but the other one is from the post-credit scene, so we'll just save it for that.
Okay. Yeah. I honestly, all of my favorite lines come from the sequence, the first fight sequence with Tony and Doctor Strange and Peter Parker showing up.
Dude, you're embarrassing me in front of the wizards.
I'm sorry. I can't, or he won't. Like, I don't.
Hey, stand down. Keep an eye on him.
Every time they kind of just crush how silly the entire thing is.
That's exactly what the Dinklage line is for me. Like, you're calling a spade, even though we all know it's a spade. Hardly ever do people like break that fourth wall a little bit, or like a nod to the fourth wall and just do that.
You're about to take the full force of a star. It'll kill you.
Only if I die.
Yes, that's what killing you means.
Yeah, and Peter gets good lines too. Like right when he gets pulled up when he's trying to protect Strange.
Mr. Stark, I'm being beamed up.
I was like, "That's great, good Star Trek reference."
Also,
I got that reference.
Another one, that's good. I like that. Another one thrown in there.
Oh, by the way, this is a friend of mine, Tree.
I am Groot.
I am Steve Rogers.
I know it was forced in the middle of fighting and probably wasn't there, but I was just like, "That's such a Cap and Groot thing." Like, seeing those like combinations of characters that you never would have imagined in like 5 years ago coming together, I guess stuff is awesome.
Yeah, and I like Drax saying the stuff about Thor. He's like, "Oh yeah, this is a man.
He is not a dude. You're a dude. This is a man. A handsome, muscular man."
It's very good. All that stuff is good. I'll always welcome goofy ass Drax shit. I don't know if there's a lot to say about the Russos other than, like, this is the biggest thing they've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
I think the action sequences are mostly bland. I think they're pretty good.
I think they did a good job of staying true to these characters. That's one thing that felt really nice is when you get these people introduced, each one had a little moment that reminded me, yes, this is them. This is who they are. I thought they got those right.
Well, and that's what I said. Like, I love the fights with Thanos because at this point, this is one of the problems I had with Age of Ultron, we got a lot of, you know, here's a horde of CGI things and the guys are just swinging away and Thor is wiping 50, 60 of them off the map at a time, you know, and all that stuff. And to me, that's a little tired. But when you have one super powerful guy who we've come to know, even if we disagree with, obviously, his entire philosophy, the stakes feel bigger. You're more invested in those fights. So every fight with Thanos for me, or every scene opposing Thanos was the best action scenes of the movie for me, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, my whole perspective on it is this movie's a mess, but just think about what a much larger mess it would have been in the hand of lesser people.
Oh, sure.
I don't know
that's
that
an awesome mess.
I mean, it's a big, beautiful mess. I just, you know, I think that it's so difficult to wrangle that many things. I actually don't know if it would have been possible for this to have been a perfectly coherent narrative. It's just a big ass, mess full of exciting things.
I mean, it's safe to say nothing like this has ever been done before the movies, at least in, not that I can think
not
of at
close,
all. So, that they were able to pull it off, and whether it's a mess or not, it was coherent enough to follow, to get through, and like to give everybody their moments and to be satisfying in so many ways. I mean, the other thing about it is, though, that I will say is it does feel like half a movie.
Yes,
which it obviously is, you know, there's no resolution to a lot of the threads and that's all going to get resolved in Endgame. So if you were to look at this as a standalone, you might be like, what are these guys doing? But I think as a setup for the climax that we're going to get in the movie to come, it works really well.
Post credits.
Yeah. The other best line.
What's the best line?
Mother.
Oh, no. Mother.
Goes
anytime
away.
You get to see Samuel L. Jackson say, or at least insinuate those words on screen, it's delightful to me.
Yeah, it's cool. They're just chilling. Sam Jackson, Colby Smulders, just smoldering it up.
Then we get the beeper.
And then, they bust out the beeper because people start disappearing, including Maria Hill, including Sam Jackson. It's the last thing that he does right before he gets snapped up. And you see the pager land on the ground, and then you see the little star-shaped thing, and then you see the colors of Captain Marvel pop up. And that's the end. And also somewhere there's also Thanos who's just chilling.
Mm-hmm.
He's chilling. Also, and the gauntlet is messed
a
up. We should probably
well
mention
done.
that the gauntlet is kind of jacked.
Yeah.
Endgame.
I mean,
but
so
having rewatched this again and having watched, I guess, all of the trailers that have come out, have you had any new predictions, any bold claims you want to make?
Not that have come out of this movie. I mean, I think it does a lot of setup. There are threads here, obviously, that lead into the movie. It's you know, everything in this movie is feeding into Endgame.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to think, is there anything that in the last rewatches that you've had that you said, oh, maybe this will happen?
Steve shouldn't have shaved.
Wow.
Ooh. That's it.
I'd be down with that one for sure. The one thing I think I hope happens, and I have a hunch they may lean into, is a redemption for Quill. Like he messed up huge, right? Yeah. And I know it was a little bit clunky and forced, but like ridiculous. So even if it was really smooth, he would have like cost the universe basically. If there's a way to redeem him, he seems to be like a very viable character to cast the final blow or do something to make up for that.
I mean, I think because at the end of this movie, we're left with the core team, right? Thor, Steve, Tony, Black Widow. And so I think personally, you want my predictions? I think those guys, at least some of those guys, are going to die.
Yeah.
I think that the other thing, here's my big prediction, because we have the scene where Thanos tries to kill Cap and Cap pushes back and Thanos is like, whoa, I can't believe this mortal is, you know, whatever. Cap's going to wield Mjolnir. That's my prediction for Endgame.
Whoa.
Ooh.
Whoa, whoa.
We've been hinting at it. He moved it in
Age of Ultron.
Yep. Age of Ultron. So I think Cap's going to wield it. And that's my big prediction.
Mjolnir, that's a pretty bold.
Whatever Thor's weapon that can't be lifted by anyone who's not worthy of the power of Thor.
That's a bold claim. Yeah. Could happen.
I'm a bold guy.
Do you have anything that you could think of?
The Quill one was one. I think he's going to be one of the guys that casts like the final blow or has kind of redemption moment there. I think Doctor Strange, obviously, everybody has been talking about how the time stone factors into this time travel. Where do you go back? How far do you go back? And that's kind of like a whole podcast within itself. But besides those two, the only one that stuck out was the Hulk, right? You don't see anything from him in this movie.
His unwillingness to fight.
And this is the first time you see that, really. He's been able to control it through the entire MCU, even in Avengers. The one hint in the first Avengers movie, reason why he's able to control it is because he's always angry. You don't see him angry at all in Endgame. He is nervous. He's anxious. He's everything except angry. It's like, that's the one thing you need to get him. You need to get him angry.
Honestly, I got to tell you what I wanted after rewatching this for whatever time it is that I've watched it, thinking about that. It's time. It's time for another Hulk movie. We're really due. It's time. I mean, Thor Ragnarok was pretty close, but a real movie that's about that specifically, I really feel like they've set that up. I don't know if they'll knock it down, but man, I would love to see it. Here's my prediction. They keep doing this stuff in the trailers where Tony says, you know, I know you hate surprises, but I was hoping I was going to be able to pull off one last one. I do think that Pepper is pregnant. I know people won't like that, but I do think she is. I don't think that Tony is. This is my new thing. This viewing, I do think Cap will die. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Tony's going to die. I think that Tony is going to survive. I think he's going to find out that Pepper is pregnant, and I think that he is going to retire for real. Yeah. That's what I think is going to happen.
And you still mentor Peter and the show.
He can still do that, but he's not going to be doing this Iron Man stuff to the same degree. He's going to, you know, there won't be any more robots
like the
in the headpiece.
Bruce Wayne from Batman Beyond. Right.
There you go. Yeah. Great.
I don't think anybody else except Cap is going to die. That's my big thing. I think that's it.
I don't think Thor is going to die either because Ragnarok was such a huge success, and it's like they finally figured out what to do with this guy, and they're not going to toss him aside.
No.
Anyway, all right. So those are our thoughts. Hey, Warvis, where does Avengers: Infinity War wind up in our ranking, our official ranking of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies?
In Sci-Fi Wire's official ranking of the MCU, Avengers Infinity War ranks number 3 out of 21, just ahead of Guardians of the Galaxy and just behind Iron Man.
Wow.
Whoa.
Whew. That is much higher than I would put it, to be honest.
I mean, it was awesome just seeing all the characters come together, but I agree. It's like 6 maybe for me.
I mean, in terms of bigness and significance to the whole enterprise, it's the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
But is it the movie I enjoyed the third out of all these films? Probably not. But
I agree, yeah.
But I mean, you can't deny like the stakes of it and the scope of it and the surprise of how they ended it is like makes it so significant.
Absolutely,
for sure.
That is our podcast. I look forward to you checking out tomorrow's podcast when you're going to get a nice palate cleanser. In the form of Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's kind of a nice, small story, if you will, compared to this. I think it's very necessary. It's a nice thing to sort of chill out to before you go back to the 90s and get Captain Marvel after that. But that is our show. I want to thank our hosts today, who did a wonderful job, Adam Swiderski, John Irwin. Thank you guys very much for checking it out with me. And we will see you again tomorrow for another episode of 22 Days of Marvel.